this is Marianne Turner. I'm based at Monash University in the Education Faculty, and I'm delighted to be talking to Professor Esther de Jong from the University of Colorado, Denver. This is the third in a series of podcasts on how we can take a multilingual stance to our linguistically and culturally diverse classrooms. In the last podcast, we talked about multilingual stance as a continuum or a journey rather than a destination. On the left-hand side of this continuum is the idea of forbidding home languages in the classroom. This then moves to allowing the students to use their home languages if they're really struggling with English, then maintain, where teachers actively plan activities whereby English as an additional language students or multilingual learners are drawing on their home languages. Then, further along the continuum, we have foster or affirm. And this is where multilingualism is positioned as the norm in the classroom, even when students are monolingual. And this is what we are really interested in, and it's what we're going to focus on in this podcast. So first, Esther, why do you think it's important to promote multilingualism as the norm for all students, not only multilingual learners, but everyone?
Thanks, Marianne. I think for me, it has a lot to do with the fact that we encounter differences and difference like across all facets of our lives in many different ways, and especially in schools where children come with many different identities, with different experiences, and teachers are kind of managing all of those differences, right? And unfortunately, the way that we do that is often that some ways of being are seen as better than others, and we create these hierarchies because we tend to grow up having to categorize things and putting things together, and then we attach a value to that. Martha Minow actually was a lawyer in the United States, calls that the dilemma of difference. How do we treat difference in our classroom, and how can we make sure that difference doesn't become a stigma because we're different, right? And that applies to students with special needs, that applies to children who speak languages other than whatever the school language is. So for me, making sure that all students understand that multilingualism is something that happens in our community, that this is part of their peer, somebody who's in the classroom with them, becomes so important in order to create understanding, like mutual understanding. I also think it fosters curiosity and being able to learn about people who are different than you are. And in this day and age, if we look at any society around the world, we have so many different groups coming together. And so our ability to negotiate that and being curious about what might be different and why that might be different, I think, is so important. And I think elevating language is something that's very visible, and people can hear it and see it. Ends up being one of those places where that's so important. I think the other reason is that because some of the conversations that we have around multilingualism and why monolingualism matters and why home languages matter, and the benefits of multilingualism that we talk about in the research in terms of whether it's cognitive or economic or cultural or educational, that knowledge stays with the EEL student and their teachers and their parents and families, hopefully. Hopefully we communicate it to them too. And so that knowledge stays there. And it doesn't get into, this should be knowledge that everybody needs to know. So we can all shift from thinking about, oh, another language as a deficit to something that truly is an asset. And in order to be able to do that, it means that everybody needs to understand the importance of multilingualism, not only for the individual, but also for families and for communities. So those are two things that I think makes it so important that multilingualism is the norm across the board and not just for EEL students or their families.
Absolutely. Yeah, I agree with that. And I also think, too, I'm very interested in one group of people in particular in terms of keeping language is so we have the multilingual learners, and in Australia we think of English as an additional language learners as people who need help with their English. That's generally how they're categorized. But there's a group of learners who don't necessarily need help with their English, but they have a home language other than English at home, and then often they might lose that. So one thing that we can really do by treating multilingualism as the norm in classroom is to help people understand that home languages are everyone's business. As Andrea Scialli and Susanna Eisenschloss said in a chapter in Multilingualism as Opportunity, they called that was the title of their chapter, which I loved because I think it's true. So it takes a village, as they say, to make sure that the children really understand the value of what they have, because they often think, well, no, English is the dominant language, so why do I need to speak a language that's spoken at home? And that also does damage to relationships with beloved, with significant others who speak those languages. So this is something else that I think is very important in terms of helping people understand that multilingualism is very valuable, and so it can be a norm in schools. So how do we do it? We can divide this into different sections. We can divide it into whole school approaches, and then what teachers can do in their classrooms. But Esther, what kind of approaches do you think work?
So I think of this as, we make a lot of decisions about language and language use in schools, as well as language varieties, right? It's not just, let's say, in the United States, Spanish versus English, but there's also different varieties of English, and there's even different varieties of Spanish, and how we respond to that and how we create spaces. And what I like to think about, because sometimes we cannot do all the things that we might want to do, is the agency that comes with the choices that we make. And I sometimes think of it as what happens with language when you walk into a school, literally from the moment you open the door to get into the school. In the United States, there often is a welcome sign for parents. And so it's kind of like, well, is that a monolingual sign? Or do we see welcome in many different languages? And so it's kind of like, so walk through the school and see what notifications or notices are there. Are they in more than one language? And if they are in more than one language, how are they displayed? Is it always the same language on top versus the other language on the bottom? If you have two individual signs, are they of the same quality? What we sometimes see is that just the original sign was printed in English. And then the school, in a very good attempt, said we also need materials in other languages, but then the quality is very different in terms of what's being produced right now. And so that, we sometimes refer to this as this kind of linguistics landscape that we have in the school really matters, because from the moment parents and children walk into the school, they're getting a message about whether the school and the educators and the people in the school value their languages, who they are, and what they bring to the school. So it's a very foundational kind of thing. It's just the physical environment already matters. So when you think about the classroom, then this kind of typically kind of where we go to. Now think of this as a teacher. What would you do in your classroom if you could not or did not use verbal language, for example? What would happen? Or if you didn't use text in your classroom? We do so much through language and with language in our classrooms. We communicate our values through language to our students. So even how we talk about multilingualism in our classroom is a decision that we make as teachers and educators, and that matters as part of this multilingual stance. I think the other places for teachers where we typically kind of think about is, so you're teaching a very linguistically diverse classroom, is around, so how are the languages displayed in the classroom? Are they visible? Can we see them? Are they on the wall? Are they in the, if you have a classroom library, are they in the books? Are they in the supporting materials? When you have technology, are you leveraging technology to make all the languages in the classroom visible in many different ways? And sometimes it's as simple as saying, hey, we're learning a new vocabulary word. Do you know this word in your language or in other languages than the language that we're using for instruction right now? Or there's songs that we can use to embrace that. So in terms of curriculum materials, are the languages in different languages there? One of the things that we don't often maybe talk about is how we do we group students so that they can leverage their full linguistic repertoire. If I always put the beginning EEL student, English as an additional language student, with all of the let's say, fluent English speakers who don't speak that student's language, they're kind of like they can only use the English that they have, but they cannot necessarily use their entire bilingual repertoire. Whereas I have some other bilingual students in that grouping, there are more opportunities for using all of the languages as students kind of negotiate things with themselves. So as teachers, and I kind of go back to this, we have a lot of agency as language decision makers in terms of which languages. How do we use them? Where do we use them? Where, as a teacher, do you move along that continuum from, not allowing to really saying, we're going to make this really visible in my classroom? What I appreciate, though, is that, as I said, there's not just the kind of the curriculum or how we use languages, but I really appreciate people who've been thinking about how does this affect the entire school? And I want to kind of reference here what is called the Language Friendly School Movement. And we'll have a resource that goes along with this podcast about that. And also David Corson's work, who has done a lot of work in terms of linguistic diversity in schools and language policy in schools. What they do is to kind of push this a little bit further and say, so beyond the kinds of decisions we make in the classroom, what are some other areas that we need to think about because they also affect how we treat languages, how we make them visible, and how do we make multilingualism the norm? And here just I'll just mention just a couple of the examples that they come up with. The first one, which I think is so important, is anything we do for teachers in terms of professional development. Oftentimes, professional development is designed to address a group of students or teachers teaching a group of students who may be fluent speakers of English. It's not always designed to include. So, how do you work with second language learners with that curriculum? For example, if it's a new math curriculum, how does this affect bilingual learners? How might you include languages other than, let's say, English in Australia and the United States? So, the professional development that we have and do in schools and/or sometimes mandated by larger units, to what extent does that? Is that in fact inclusive of multilingual learners, including languages other than the formal school language? So I thought that it's such an important thing because we use professional development, right, to transform schools. And so if you want to transform schools for multilingual learners, we need to include this perspective in those efforts. Another one that may not be as evident is anti-bullying policies. Many schools have those. But what the Language Friendly School Movement says, well, but does your policy include language around you cannot bully based on language use or, language varieties? And you cannot put people down because they speak with an accent or they speak a slightly different way than you do. So I think just that addition in the policy is just really, really important in saying this matters. This matters across the school and what we do. I think parent-school communication, in what ways do we, really encourage multilingual communication with parents and talk with them too about how important the use of the home language is and the role that they can play in supporting multilingualism. Schools could survey, which I thought was a really interesting example. They can survey their school, their community, and just look at the different languages that are present in the school. This is interesting. I remember a fifth grade project where the teacher basically said, well, there's not that many languages spoken in my classroom because most of the students in her classroom had been reclassified. They were no longer classified as an English language learner. And so on paper, they looked like any other student in the classroom. There was nothing that says, former bilingual learner. And so she's like, we're fine. And I said, well, why don't you survey the students and talk with them about, like, so what other languages do you know or are you exposed to? And she was just blown away because not only were her English, former English language learners had many different languages, but also the ones that she thought were just English speakers, like, oh, you have a grandmother who speaks Russian. And so she learned so much about the linguistic diversity in her classroom, unbeknownst to her. So it was a good exercise. I also think we really need to think about our assessment practices. The tendency tends to be to only do assessment in one language. And so how do we bring in students' other ways of communicating as part of our assessment to really understand what students are able to do when they are able to use their full, both linguistic and academic abilities? And the last example I'll mention is just staffing. It matters when students see people who speak their languages, who understand where they're coming from, may have lived in the country that they are coming from. And so to have staff who are bilingual, multilingual, who have been in different places matters. And that requires very strategic recruitment and support for those bilingual teachers, bilingual staff. And so you can see with these examples, at least I hope, is that when we talk about multilingualism as a stance and multilingual as a norm, yes, it affects the classroom. Yes, it affects the physical environment in the school, but it also affects all of these other kinds of policies and practices that we put in place at the school level.
No, absolutely. It's and I would say I really like. I hadn't seen this becoming a language-friendly school, and hearing you talking about it, Esther, is so interesting. I really think that it's a very good idea to have a school-based policy, and I would say that becoming a language-friendly school and what I've seen does count. I would consider that to be a school-based language policy. So the way I think that language policy is useful, it can sound very official. But I think at this in different schools, we can think of it as just a way to refer to a group of people, a school community, for example, how they think about and manage language and language practices. So I think what I've worked with is how you do that with different groups of students. So as I said before, I'm very interested in the group where it's invisible. Often their home language practices are invisible. Maybe with EAL students is a little bit more visible because we know, okay, well, they come from somewhere else. They speak another language perhaps better or more fluently than they speak English. So the three groups, and they are overlapping, they're not just discrete groups that I have considered, is the EAL students, the people who do need help with their English, the students who do speak home languages or exposed to home languages at home, but do have English, enough English to cope with school, and a third group are language learners, so people who are learning language at school. And I think if we are thinking about multilingualism as the norm, then, and we are including monolingual students in that, then we need to work out, okay, well, how do we include them? As because it flips, yeah. So often in classrooms we're thinking, oh, how do we include the multilingual learners? But what we were really talking about is if we're thinking about it as the norm, we have to think, how do we include the monolingual learners? And if we think, as we do, that it's a good idea to learn language, then we can try to think about how to bring a school-taught language into the class alongside home languages so that everybody can be included. So the way that I have thought about the policy, the school-based policy, is through objectives. So taking objectives as the policy, if you like. So I also thought that it was perhaps useful to think about two different kinds of objectives. So objectives for learning language as a resource. This is the first one, and objectives for learning languages. So when we're thinking about including the monolingual students in what we do in the classroom, having multilingualism as the norm. So the objectives for learning language as a resource is thinking about affirming and valuing multilingual identities as number one, also guiding general learning and instruction, so helping these students learn by drawing on their language practices and reflecting critically on language, bringing other languages into the classroom. And this is what I found with my research, or the research that I've done, is that allowing home languages to be visible in the classroom does really help critical reflection. It shows, the different kinds of, well, the linguistic hierarchies that are at play really become more evident to the teachers. And then objectives for learning languages. Using the target language for everyday communication. So if you bring it into another classroom, not necessarily the language classroom, then you can use it in different ways. It might just be a few words. It doesn't have to be a lot. So learning content-related target language in different content areas. So, for example, CLIL, Content and Language Integrated Learning, is something that's quite big in terms of learning target languages. This can be integrated into classrooms where home languages are being brought in as well. And learning language in language classes via cross-curricular content. So this is another thing you can do too, like bring other languages into the language classroom when you're thinking about the target language. So I think that if we are going to make multilingualism as the norm, we do need to think about everyone. And one example that I can give is in a class working with a teacher who was looking at year 5, 6. So she was that it was upper primary level, and what she did was get the students to write something of their choice, a diary, a story, or a letter in English. So she was just starting out. So she wrote it, she got them to write it in English first, and then they translated the text into another language. So either their home language or Japanese, which was the school taught language. And then they added illustrations and shared the text with the class. They also had buddies in the foundation year who they shared their text with as well. So it meant that everybody could be included. Because if they, and also if people are a bit shy about using their home language, then they could also use Japanese if they wanted to. So this was just one example and of a way to help include everybody in the classroom in the activity.
I really like that. It makes me think of a project that focuses really on multilingual awareness. And so, like you said, it's not about how proficient will you become, but it allows students to really explore how languages are different and how they are similar. And I saw this in Wisconsin. Gail Prasad was working on this. And one of the activities that the kindergarten teacher did was, as part of, learning how the written language works, is that students would get different words or phrases in different languages, and they had to group them by what language do you think this is? What goes together? And can you name this language? And how do you know it's this language? And so it wasn't about becoming fluent in Arabic, but it was like, I know Arabic exists. I know somebody who speaks that language because they're in my classroom. And this is kind of what that looks like. And so that whole notion of multilingual awareness, I think, is so powerful.
Absolutely. So thanks, Esther. I've really enjoyed this discussion today and really look forward to thinking about how these ideas are put into practice in primary, secondary, and tertiary contexts. So we'll do that in future episodes. But thank you very much.
Thank you.